Blog Talk Radio.
Today on Backroom Politics, this is a special edition. For the next 2 hours, the Washington Insider Roundtable will be talking about Osama bin Laden. He is dead. He has been dead for 48 hours. A lot of buzz going on here in Washington. This is Backroom Politics, live from Shelley's Back Room. It's Tuesday here in the nation's capital. It's 4 o'clock in the East Coast. It is now time for Backroom Politics, live from Shelley's Back Room, 1331 F Street in the heart of our nation's capital. With me, as always, is our usual roundtable on Tuesdays of political insiders. To my left, he is the former eight-term member of Congress from Washington 2nd District, former vice president for Burlington Northern Railroad. He is Congressman Al Swift. Congressman, welcome back.
Thank you. It's an historic time.
It is. And sitting directly across from me this time, in a non-usual spot for him, he is the vice president of the Eurasia Center. He is a bar-certified attorney in the great state of New York and the District of Columbia. He is Dr. Ralph Winnie. Ralph, welcome back.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
And I am your moderator, Justin Russell. Oddly missing today is our other roundtable pundit, the Honorable Bob Hines, who is actually right now, as we speak, attending the display or the introduction of the Gerald R. Ford statue in the Hall of Statues at Congress, and we wish our best to the members of the Ford family and to Bob and everybody associated with the Ford Foundation. So, what's been going on?
Well, thank God Osama bin Laden is dead.
Here's one thing that went on. I went to bed early, and so for the first time in years, I read a major breaking story on the front page
of a newspaper. Wow. Yeah. Well, unless you've been under a rock or you've been on some third world tropical island in the middle of the Pacific with no connectivity, the big news here in Washington, as well as the big news worldwide, the leader of Al-Qaeda, the number one most wanted human being by the FBI, Osama bin Laden, has been found and has been summarily killed after an assault on a compound in Pakistan by a team of Navy SEALs that went into Abbottabad, I believe is the case, in northern Pakistan. Here's what we know so far. On Sunday, a team of SEAL operatives with the U.S. Navy boarded two helicopters and went from Afghanistan into Pakistan, into the northwest section or the northeast section of the country, about 60 miles outside of Islamabad. From there, we had a Navy SEAL team go in and conduct an operation which included identifying and trying to capture Osama bin Laden alive. During the operation, apparently a gunfight ensued, at which time the SEAL team responded in like manner with rapid fire. As a result, Osama bin Laden was killed as a part of the operation. The news broke late on Sunday evening, around 10 o'clock Eastern time here in the nation's capital. It was truly a momentous occasion. I can tell you right now, I personally became emotional when it happened. It was truly a historic event that I never thought I would see in this short a time, quite frankly.
I think the only thing that I can recall that was even close, and it was only close, and that was the coming down of the Berlin Wall.
Ralph, what were you doing when this happened?
It was very meaningful because so many people poured out into the streets in D.C. and New York to celebrate with American flags. It was the most fabulous experience to just be there and kind of watch what was going on, especially near out near the White House.
Well, I will tell you, I was actually home when my BlackBerry started just lighting up. People inside the government just saying, look, hey, get to a TV.
Right.
Ask them why, just get to a TV. When the president came down that red carpet into the East Room, you kind of knew it was going, something big was about to be announced. Now, those watching CNN, Wolf Blitzer actually broke the story in rightful journalistic manner. He had speculated that something was going on. He had heard rumblings that something had happened involving our efforts in Pakistan and Afghanistan. I don't think anybody outside of the select few that were involved in the Situation Room truly knew the aspects of what the president was going to announce at around 11:30 on Sunday evening, at which point A huge celebration occurred in Lafayette Park, just outside the White House. But there are still, to this moment, many, many questions that come up. There are still many, many answers that need to be found as a result of this. He was in a million-dollar compound inside Pakistan. And, oh, by the way, he was literally walking distance from the Pakistani military academy and within driving distance of the National Intelligence Operations Center, the ISI's training center, there in northeast Pakistan. So there's a lot of questions that have to be answered. Today we're going to be fortunate. We're going to have several guests on our show. We're going to have the former Assistant Commissioner for Customs and Border Protection, retired U.S. Coast Guard officer Jeff Robertson will be joining us during the first and into the second hour. And then we're also very fortunate to have the leading expert on theological terrorism and counterterrorism, anti-terrorism issues. He is Dr. Dave Bannett. He is Dr. Dave Bannett is going to be on our show. He is the director for anti-terrorism, counterterrorism, and a professor out for the Center for Homeland Defense at the Naval Postgraduate School out in Monterey, California. We would love to have everybody call in, please, with any comments, thoughts about the Osama bin Laden situation. Please give us a call. That number is 619-638-8477. Again, that number is 619-638-8477. Let's get into the discussion. First of all, Al, not to call your age into question on this, but you've been around for a long time. You've been around Washington.
Yes, yes.
You've been around Washington D.C. for a long time. Tell me, how historical was the message? How historical was this in your eyes?
Well, as I said, I thought it was more historical than the announcement that the Berlin Wall was coming down, which I thought was spectacularly important. That meant the end of the Soviet Union and so forth and so on. In terms of good news for us, I can't think of anything that beats it short of the end of the Second World War and that kind of thing. In terms of bad news, that's different. You got JFK and so forth. But in terms of good news, this about tops the list.
Ralph, this obviously has a global impact on this. When the president announced this particular event, judging from your contact internationally, how big was this internationally? How big was the response from the international community, the fact that we had found him and wasn't able to take him alive, but in fact he was a casualty of the operation?
I think everyone was in shock because nobody believed that Osama bin Laden could ever be found and captured or killed. So when it actually happened, people were in a state of shock and disbelief, but very pleased because they recognized the terrible person that Osama bin Laden was and his ties to radical Islamic fundamentalism. And in this country, it was so great to see everyone come together and be unified once everyone got the news that Osama bin Laden had been killed. For once, everyone in this country is unified around something.
Well, let's talk about that for a second. You know, when the tragic events of 9/11 happened, we saw a nation truly come together as one. There were no Republicans, there were no Democrats. This was it was a heartfelt response as Americans. Al, do you think that kind of coalition, that kind of coming together, if you will, was properly voiced in this announcement? Have we come together and unified as Americans as opposed to getting into the partisan politics of it all?
I think we have for a time. I'm afraid it would be a fairly short time. you know, hopefully for the rest of this week, at least. It will depend on some of the other things that will happen. As you said, there are a lot of questions, and we're going to start getting answers, and those are things people can argue about, and it'll start to come apart. But it's wonderful that we come together occasionally, because it then lets the coming apart stretch out over time. Then we come together again, and then we pray around the edges, as will always occur in democracy.
And we have to really congratulate our intelligence and our military for the great job that they did.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that, because there's the intelligence community. Obviously, this is a huge, huge boost to not only their operation, but in many aspects, as a result of the invasion of Iraq, the operations in Afghanistan, our intelligence community and the global intelligence community of our allies has been called into question. We lost some credibility, I think, in our intelligence community. Has this helped reestablish some of that credibility, you think? And we're going to talk about that in more detail, but just for our opening segment.
The answer is yes, and I think it is immeasurably, and this could be temporary too, but it's immeasurably increased President Obama's standing in terms of toughness, willing to make the decision, decisiveness, and so forth and so on.
Yeah, because Obama had been perceived as being very weak on foreign affairs and national security, so this is obviously a feather in his cap to be able to take credit for finally being able to kill Osama bin Laden.
Well, and when you realize all the things that could have gone wrong, if we go back to Jimmy Carter's effort to try and rescue the captives in Iran years ago, and the helicopter crashed and all kinds, it turned out to be a disaster. This one could have, Obama had to know that when he made the call.
Well, let's talk about that aspect right now. Let's talk about Obama's efforts and what has happened from the aspect of the Oval Office. I want to touch on what you were talking about, Al. I have heard both Republicans and Democrats say that this is probably one of the gutsiest moves they've ever seen a president take, short of Harry Truman giving the go-ahead to drop the atomic bomb on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. I tend to agree with that. I think that with us being skittish about putting service members in harm's way in theater, and with the prolific involvement of unmanned vehicles, whether it's using missiles or using JCAD bombs or using unmanned drones, UAVs, unmanned aerial vehicles, the idea of using a Predator B would have been the smart play. That would have just had him just chip up to the green. President Obama, using a golf analogy, drove for the hole on this one. And how risky was that, Adam?
Well, we don't know enough about it technically to know, but we do know that he had several options. That there was disagreement over which were the safest options and most likely options. An inference, at least, that I read in the Post this morning indicated that this was one of the riskier ones, but it had advantages if they pulled it off, it would they would kill fewer people. They would less inflame, the theory was, the Arabic world. So it was a gutsy call.
And now Al-Qaeda's in disarray. They don't have a natural leader to take over the position of Osama bin Laden.
Yeah.
They never expected that America would be able to find bin Laden's whereabouts. So
well,
this has really shaken them to the core.
And I can tell you right now that there's breaking news coming over the wire from CNN that apparently there's been some sort of blast or explosion in Kabul, Afghanistan. Something's going on in Afghanistan. That is literally just breaking news that came across CNN. I think more details will be coming in, and we'll follow that, obviously, on the TV screens here in the smoke-encrusted nerve center of Backroom Politics. But in the meantime, just to let you know, there has been an event in Kabul. We'll give you updates as we get them. Let's go back to some of the options that the president had. The president said one of the things he did not want to do was to use a traditional JCATS bomb because of the possible civilian casualties, which, again, would have been the smart, easy play. You know, a lot of people said, look, there are casualties of war. This is a war. This is in our national interest. We got to get this guy.
And this is reflective of the American psyche. We go out of our way to do everything we can not to harm civilians, to the point where sometimes we have put our own soldiers in harm's way. Other countries don't do that.
Al,
going back to how gutsy it was, this is also out of a movie. I mean, you send in eight guys, I think it was, and...
I think it was a few more. Our understanding right now is it was a SEAL team that was supplemented by CIA paramilitary.
You send them all in, you have a big firefight, you get the bad guys, no good guys are hurt, and you come home mission accomplished. That comes out of Hollywood. That
right.
does not normally come out of the real world.
But they're very, very well trained. Obviously,
they know how
to do everything.
Well, we'll talk about that here later, but focusing back on the president's actions, the president himself, in the decision to give the green light with the operation, truly he had to have been haunted by the desert rescue in Iran back in 1980, which cost the lives of numerous service members, which was, by all accounts, and I hate to say this, by all accounts, was a military planning fiasco. That had to have haunted them. So that decision still really shows the backbone of this president, and any critics that come out and say, hey, by the way, he doesn't have the fortitude. This guy doesn't have the mettle to make some of the true decisions in wartime. He proved himself to be a wartime president, Al.
In addition to that, he has taken on Pakistan. He didn't tell Pakistan about it. He gave them no forewarning. He didn't ask permission. He went in and did it, and then I gather he informed them or somebody else did. So that's setting up a difficult foreign policy issue for him, but he didn't seem to be timid about that either.
And unfortunately, there are a lot of elements in Pakistan that have been helping Osama bin Laden that have not been cooperating with the Pakistani government or with the American military. So now that's going to be interesting to see what kind of dynamic that plays.
Well, we're going to talk about that here in the next segment.
Yeah.
We're coming up on 20 minutes past the hour. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to continue the discussion on the events surrounding the bin Laden capture, the bin Laden operation in Abbottabad, Pakistan. So stay with us. This is Backroom Politics live from Shelley's Backroom. We'll be back in 2 minutes. 1331 F Street in the heart of our nation's capital. This is Blog Talk Radio's Backroom Politics, and we're continuing the discussion on the Bin Laden operation, recapping a little bit of the discussion from earlier. We're just going over Barack Obama's response and how he handled this operation and how presidential he was throughout this whole evolution. I want to stay on that for a second and talk about We talked a little bit about the decisions he had to make. I got to tell you something. This was, without a doubt, the best-kept secret in Washington in recent history. Nobody, and I mean nobody, knew about this. Nobody from the Hill knew about it until it was actually done and in the bag. It was truly in a town where tactical leakage is part of the standard operating procedure. This didn't leak out at all. Which is amazing.
And I'll bet you don't get a lot of whining out of the Hill over the fact that they weren't informed, as happened quite recently.
Very unusual.
Well, it is unusual. And I got to tell you something. It's a testament to the control of Barack Obama. And I would venture to say this is a testament to how Secretary Clinton was one of the few that was in the Situation Room when this happened. Traditionally, the Joint Chiefs and those from the Pentagon don't leak this too much. That's part of their nature. But this shows the true control that Secretary Clinton has at the State Department down at Foggy Bottom. It is a true testament to White House Chief of Staff
Daley.
Yeah. Chief of Staff Daley, and the control
Secretary
he has.
Of Defense.
And Secretary of Defense Gates. This, I mean, looking at Secretary of Defense Gates for a second, this is a great swan song for someone who is truly...
east of the sun and west of the moon, we'll build a dream house of love.
press 5. We didn't get your message either because you were not speaking or because of a bad connection. To disconnect, press 1. To record your message, press 2.
Than we do here.
So
might
makes right, is what Al is saying.
It does. Okay, stay with us. We're going to try and figure this out. We'll be back with our guest, Jeff Robertson, here in about 2 seconds. Stay with us.
I have the right question.
East of the sun and west of the moon, we'll build a dream house of love.
On one of our guests coming into the smoke-encrusted nerve center of Shelley's back room. We're going to try this again. Jeff Robertson, you're on the air.
Well,
Jeff Robertson, you're on the air.
We can't hear.
Okay. Wow, that's not working at all. Cannot figure out how that's working out. We're gonna have one of our folks try and call in. And then also, if you would like to tell us that you're hearing us, dial in at 619-638-8477. Again, that number is 619-638-8477. One of the disadvantages of doing a live remote broadcast radio show here on Backroom Politics. We're going to try this again here. And somebody should be calling in right about now. Let's try this out.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. So I think the question is not with us. I think the question is with the incoming caller. So... Jeff, if you can get to a landline somehow, give us a call back. We're waiting for you. And then also at the top of the hour, we've also got Dr. Dave Banner, who's going to be on with us as well. Anyway, so going back to the situation with Osama bin Laden, there's been some talk regarding, now that we got bin Laden, does it reevaluate what we're doing in Afghanistan? And I know that the Karzai government in Kabul has pretty much come out and said, hey, we don't want you pulling out right now. It's just not effective for us right now. Should we, as a nation, look at our involvement in Afghanistan right now, or are we getting into another situation after Charlie Wilson's war?
I don't know. It seems to me that that if we pull out now, it would be premature, just the way Charlie Wilson admitted it was premature for us to leave Afghanistan after the Russians left. So I don't think we have a lot of choice in the short term. In the long run, yes, we need to get out of Afghanistan, but we have to manage that, not just abruptly do it.
Right.
You do not want a unilateral pullout. What you want is to be able to sufficiently train the Afghan military and police force so they will gradually be able to take control and be able to root out these Al-Qaeda terrorist cells that exist in Afghanistan.
Are we at this point just jousting windmills by staying in Afghanistan in a prolonged effort?
We have to have a purpose for being in Afghanistan.
What would that purpose be?
To train the Afghan military and the police to be able to adequately defend the country and to root out the Al-Qaeda terrorist cells.
Now,
I wonder, not being a person trained in foreign policy and what have you, but I wonder if they don't want us to leave now, is this a time when we could say, well, why don't you clean up the corruption in your area? Why don't you do, and could we force a number of reforms that we had been wanting there?
I think you're absolutely right. We should have done this in Vietnam when we were supporting the South Vietnamese government.
But I guess the question goes back to, do we, especially in our current fiscal crisis, do we now that we've gotten mission accomplished, I mean, the idea of going to Afghanistan was in fact to find and bring Osama bin Laden to justice. With that now being done, do we truly now have to?
No. We do not unilaterally pull out. We pull out gradually, but we have to sufficiently train the Afghan military and the police to be able to govern
their
country.
Treat it as the beginning of the end.
Absolutely.
Not the end.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to bring in our next guest on Backroom Politics, Dr. Dave Bannon. He is a professor with the Center for Homeland Defense Studies with the Naval Postgraduate School in Monterey, California. He's a former law enforcement officer spending several years involved with SWAT operations. He is a noted expert on counterterrorism. He has written many papers on the type of theological-based terrorism that is out there. Dr. Banner, are you with us?
Yes, sir.
Welcome to Backroom Politics.
Hooray!
We appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
We've been kind of going around and looking at what has happened over the past 48 hours with the announcement of the operation around Osama bin Laden in Pakistan. Tell me a little bit about what your thoughts are and how this came about, if you will, and was this the right decision to use a SEAL team versus going forward and using other options that would have had more collateral damage?
Yes, sir. Well, like you, I've been scouring everywhere, people I know, looking for information, because while we have a lot of discussion about what happened, we don't really have that much information about how it went down. I'll tell you that many of my students, I teach at the Center for Homeland Defense and Security at the Naval Postgraduate School, and my students are mid-career Homeland Security professionals. They come from the military, many from spec ops, also fire, police, those kinds of fields. And so in answer to your question, first, one of the things I've been doing is talking to these students and kind of taking their temperature. I was on the phone today with a deputy chief from FDNY and hearing about the mixed reaction that he his colleagues are experiencing from the death of bin Laden. I have to say, from my perspective, it's a great and timely victory. Thank you very much. As to the use of the special operations versus other tactics that might have been used, and I'll just tell you right up front, I'm not a big Obama supporter. I'm not a detractor either, but I would have to say I thought it took a lot of leadership and courage to use these special operations teams. This is exactly why we want this capability, so that we can take the questions off the table, the conspiracy theorists. We can take many of those conspiracies right off the table by making the kinds of identifications that apparently have been made.
Well, Dr. Bannon, let me ask this question, because you're a noted expert on terrorism as it relates to theological initiatives or theological-based terrorist activities. How much of an effect does the Bin Laden operation put a crimp in the operation of Al Qaeda? And is this symbolic enough that it's going to maybe take them out of play as a leading supporter of terrorism globally?
I would love to kind of waffle, or I would love to say yes, this just kind of takes them off the table. But certainly since the East Africa bombings in 98, we have been saying that we have degraded their capabilities by taking various key players off the table. And they have shown that they're dynamic and amorphous, resilient, and they evolve into something that meets our defensive posture. So for someone to say that, you know, that this is, you know, now we need to go on to something else, I think that's nice. That's a nice idea. But very early days, less than 48 hours since this has been announced, so you know, there's no way to know for sure. I will say that Abu Zawahiri is no rock star like Bin Laden was in the Salafist and jihadist camps. He had a charisma, Bin Laden did. He had a charisma, some street cred, was seen to be a very pious and authentic person in both his religious perspective and his political views. So they have certainly, they have removed him as that rock star. Now, whether or not in his death or in his quote-unquote martyrdom, he can be looked back to in the same effect, that's yet to be seen. I'm a little ambivalent to make those kinds of predictions.
Well, looking at Al-Qaeda as a whole, does it surprise you with the strength and support that Al-Qaeda had in that region of Pakistan and even Afghanistan with the Taliban? Does it surprise you that Bin Laden was, in fact, that much in the open and that open about his, you know, building a huge compound that close to the national capital of Pakistan?
No, sir. We tend to look at everything from an economic cost-benefit analysis in the West, and certainly as Americans, and we fail to see that Mediterranean cultures, or in this case the extended Mediterranean all the way to Central Asia, and throughout the Middle East, view have a worldview based on four pillars, I suggest. Honor and shame, patron and client relationships, a challenge and response way of doing business, and an idea of limited good. And because they view the world from this very different perspective than our economic cost-benefit analysis, their relationship to honor and shame and seeing him as a patron and them as a client would put them in a position that where they wouldn't want to give them up, those who knew him. So the millions of dollars that were in play for anyone who will give them up didn't appeal to these couriers as much as the honor they garnered from serving their patron, Bin Laden.
Doctor, does Al-Qaeda now have enough organization behind it to whereas it can now strike back? I mean, basically, I guess the key question is Osama bin Laden, in the eyes of Al-Qaeda, a martyr?
Yes. The simple answer is absolutely. In December, I believe it was, of 2001, it was believed that bin Laden had filled out a will preparing to die. He assumed, I believe, that he would be killed in the follow-up to the 9/11 attacks, that he stuck around for 9.5 years or whatever it is, 9 years 5 months, 6 months, is a tragedy. But at the same time, I see in Al-Qaeda Central, and we have to recognize there are many different types of Al-Qaeda here. We have Al-Qaeda Central, which is what we're dealing with when we talk about the killing of bin Laden. But then we have many regional manifestations, and then we have locals willing to act on an ideology that's being delivered by Al-Qaeda Central.
Well, that begs the question then, Doctor, is which is the facet of that description that should most concern the U.S. government? Is it the ideological side of it, or should we focus on the organized operational side of Al-Qaeda?
The answer to that's really simple. Yes, we should do both of those things. And to separate them and prioritize them independently is a huge mistake, I believe. Our policies need to address both those. And, you know, the operational concerns of killing bin Laden, which have kind of filled the airways for the last 2 days, are interesting and reason for victims of, you know, the families from 9/11 to have some closure and a feeling of justice. But for those of us concerned about, in your case, the politics, and in my case, just the study of terrorism, it is the nation's policies and how they develop that really, really ought to set us to pause. I think that we need to look for an adequate evaluative process for seeing how we're doing in this global war on terrorism.
Dr. Banner, Ralph Winnie's got a question for you, sir.
Yes, Doctor. I'm just curious your perspective on what the Russians and the Chinese, how they view this, the death of Osama bin Laden. Do you think it creates an opportunity for them to have a greater role in the Middle East and in dealing with the terrorism in their own countries?
I have to say that I'm assuming, and I haven't looked at this since the death, that both of these countries have had their own issues, certainly not to the extent we have, although Russia has had more of that. They've got to be celebrating, because the ideology that Al-Qaeda Central has been putting on the Internet and on the airwaves for the last 15 years, but certainly in earnest for the last 10 years, they've suffered at that hand. Yes, that, you know, the use of these troops on the ground, on the foreign land, and they're saying without notification to the Pakistani government, I have to, I don't know. It would seem to me that at some level somebody had to know something. That then gives them the opportunity to say, in the future, if they want to do such a thing, that it's very similar to what you did.
Doctor, when we look at the death of bin Laden now, is there anybody in your mind that is possibly going to stand up and be the new figurehead leader de facto of Al-Qaeda as a whole globally?
That's the $64,000 question, isn't it? Zawahiri is the obvious number two, but if you look at what he did with Egyptian Islamic Jihad before he had to go to bin Laden, they were out of money. He was very poor at doing anything internationally. He didn't have the street cred for the credibility for the jihadists. I don't know that he will have the capability to pull that off. There are other people that may come forward, but it would be real speculation on my part. Anwar al-Awlaki, the English-speaking cleric, has kind of become the internet-friendly face for extremist Islamic extremism. He doesn't have anything at all related to bin Laden's rock star kind of view by the extremists within the Islamic world.
Dr. Banner, Congressman Al Swift's got a question for you.
I'd like to go back to something that you've already touched on, and that is that we went into a foreign country without informing them. We carried out the action that we did. And is there any other way we could have done it? And if no, what problems does the way we did it pose for us in the future?
Well, I think there are problems, but I don't know if y'all are acquainted with Michael Scheuer. He's written a number of books. He's a former agency guy. He had proposed ways of killing bin Laden, which didn't involve ground troops in the past, and we didn't take advantage of doing that when he was in other places. I have to say, I think the nation needed this monster needed to be killed, and we needed to know that he was dead. The victims, the U.S. citizens who are victims, have that. I believe they need that justice. Yes, I think it does open us up to some problems. But occasionally, I think we have to put the U.S. citizens ahead of difficult positions it puts politicians in later.
Well, Dr. Bennett, we asked this question in our opening segment, and I think you're obviously the one to help us answer that. Is now that we've gotten bin Laden, the question comes up, okay, now what? What do we focus on? What is the next big thing, or is it too globally fractured that we're now going to have so many things? We just don't have that one target, bin Laden.
Yes, sir. I think that you're asking the right questions, first of all. And I think there needs to be serious men and women in Washington ask those very serious questions and not let themselves off the hook. Bin Laden was a part of it. I wouldn't say it's either the regional or Al-Qaeda Central that needs to be done. It's both. There are many, many things that need to be done. But one thing I think we need to ask, what does success look like? What does it look like in a global war against terrorism? What does it also look like in those regional wars against terrorism? And how do we evaluate effectiveness in prosecuting this war? We need some metrics. And I think that the actions that were taken on Sunday are a part of that. We need to degrade through kill or capture of the leadership and the command structures of these networks that are targeting U.S. interests and the U.S. But I see that as only one. The whole operation in Afghanistan, in addition to striking back from the attacks on 9/11, and in addition to attempt to kill or capture Al-Qaeda operatives, was also an attempt to reduce the safe haven to operate, because terrorists need that room to not be on the run to make these plans.
Dr. Banner, stay with us for 1 second. Right now on the line is Jeff Robertson, the former Assistant Commissioner of Customs and Border Protection and a former Coast Guard officer. We're going to try and bring him into discussion as well.
Yes, Jeff Robertson,
are you there?
Yeah, how you doing, Justin?
Hi, Jeff. Thanks for joining us on Backroom Politics. We appreciate you joining us.
You're as hard to find as Osama bin Laden.
Everything all right?
Yeah, everything's fine. Just spent a little time listening to some nice music there on the hold line.
There we go. Wow. Well, let's.
Did you select that, Justin? Is that your music?
That is mine, Jeff. Jeff, also on the line with us, obviously, is Dr. Dave Bannon. He is the he is a professor out at the Center for Homeland Defense and Security Studies out at the Naval Postgraduate School. Jeff, we're going to get to you in a second, but I want to go back to Dr. Bannon for a second. When we look at what the next best thing is, we've seen a lot of different We've seen a lot of different people involved, or a lot of different factions involved. You'd mentioned what was going on in Yemen, Dr. Manor. We've also seen the actions of the Tamil Tigers in the Philippines and in the Asia-Pac Rim. Is the death of bin Laden now a calling card to say we all have to come together and act as one with one ideological foe, that being the United States?
No, I don't think that you will get unity because of this death, at least not in some long-term way. There may be some, rhetorical unity, and that some statements are made by terrorists for internal consumption, and some are for external. And so you may have some rhetorical unity, but I don't think you're not going to suddenly see regional efforts like, for instance, Hamas, which is very much focused on that region and has a lot of problems with Salafists that try to come and, in fact, kill them themselves. They could try to come into Palestine. I don't think you're suddenly going to see some kind of unity between these groups at all.
Right.
There's more that separates them than what joins them,
I
would say.
Jeff Robertson, the question I want to ask you, you've been around Homeland Security since the beginning. In your eyes, it begs the question that, does it surprise you, Jeff, that Osama bin Laden, in fact, was able to exist for as long as he did in a compound that size in Pakistan in front of the National Military Academy?
You know, I'm not going to say I'm a Pakistani expert, Justin, but it really doesn't surprise me. My understanding of the existence and the way these guys operate, you're not going to operate, number one, you're not going to operate there without some type of knowledge. So there was knowledge by the authorities. To what degree, not really sure, but you can rest assured that no one lived in that area without, the Pakistani security forces being aware of it. Is it surprising? No. I think to the point the doctor was making earlier about the way the different pillars on which societies exist in different countries, I think there's a lot of admiration for bin Laden. You know, whether he's seen as an idol or whether he's seen as someone who's definitely going to be a martyr to the ideologues, it really is an ideological battle, and I'm not sure individually he would, what the long-term impact is. But it's not surprising that he could exist there, Justin. There's, different standards that we live by in different countries. One of the things that we see even closer to our own border is the way drug cartel members and individuals involved in criminal activity are able to live and pretty much have free reign. We saw that down in Colombia with the drug cartels for years. So I'm not surprised.
Ralph Winnie, you have a question.
Yeah. Jeff, how can the U.S. win over the hearts and minds of these people that were being brainwashed by these al-Qaeda cells now that Osama bin Laden has been killed, especially in Afghanistan and in Pakistan, where there's been strong support for radical Islamic fundamentalism?
I think one of the things that we're going to have to come to terms with is, Al-Qaeda may be the head of the snake, but I think the issues we're dealing with are ideological. You know, some people like to say that it's religious. I'm not sure that I'd put my finger there. I think that there's a lot more to Islam than just what the radicals are involved in. So I would say we've got to come to terms with the ideological challenges we're having. There's a Dr. John Nagel over at the Center for New American Security has written quite a bit on the whole issue of counterinsurgency and having to deal with that, and some of the successes we saw in Iraq. I think we already have, we're not going to be able to change our culture, our society, no matter how much some of our political leaders would like to change the impression we give to people. The American society is pretty well established, and the culture that we have is pretty well accepted in different parts of the world. You can put lipstick on it, but it's not really going to change who we are. How we can do that is, I think it's going to take a lot of investment, I think diplomatically. That's going to take a lot of effort, but also just more awareness. But not going to mean putting our guard down. This doesn't really change anything in terms of at least my interest here, which is, you know, the security of the borders.
And Jeff, what is your perspective on how this is going to affect China and Russia? Do you think they're very pleased that Osama bin Laden has been killed, and they've been going through, they've had many problems with Islamic fundamentalism in their own country. So how is this going to impact their respective countries?
Again, I'm not going to consider myself a China expert or an Iranian or a Russian expert. I think that I'm sure that they're not going to be disappointed with the death of bin Laden, but I'm not sure that this will do anything to decrease the threat that they have in their own countries. I think the operational organization that the Al-Qaeda network had started years ago have been operating independent. So I think you're going to continue to see maybe a change, a morph in what the organizations look like within their countries. But I'm sure that there's some, probably appreciation that he himself is gone. It's just that now there's a changing face of the threat. But I don't know specifically how that would affect them. I think their own internal problems and the threat by Islamic fundamentalism is not going to go away just because this one individual's gone.
Congressman Al.
Can I add on to that just for a second?
Yes. Absolutely, Dr. Mann, please.
They uncovered a nuclear plot today against a nuclear plant in Britain. There was a rocket attack in the last few hours in Afghanistan. Bin Laden's dead, yet the threat of this terrorism is dynamic and amorphous, and it's going to account for the death of this revered leader. It's not going to be the end of it in China, in Russia, and it's not going to be the end of it for the United States either.
And Congressman Al.
A question for either or both of you, and going back to our relationships with Pakistan, it seems to me that they might, on the one hand, get their trousers all in a clamp over the fact that we came in there to their country and did what we did. On the other hand, it seems to me we can claim that we caught them red-handed, that it's impossible to believe that he could be living so close to major areas of the Pakistan government, that we ought to be able to... Okay, question. How does this then change our relationship with Pakistan, and how do we handle it?
Dr. Banner.
I probably won't change it, although it ought to help us... wake up and smell the coffee a little bit. Anybody who's read any of Seth Jones' work on this area, perhaps his book In the Graveyard of Empires, will note that we've been aware that they've been playing both sides. But I guess, Congressman, the reality of politics is that you sometimes dance with the devil. And I don't think we should trust them fully, but I don't know what our alternative would be, seeing as they're such a key player in the region, and we kind of have to do business.
But before we've had suspicions, and I'm sure they were more than suspicions, but in terms of what the global view was, we had suspicions that they were playing games. We now know they were playing games. At least that's how I would interpret where Obama.
Right, but it looks to me like
I almost made a terrible error, but go ahead.
It looks to me like each side has given, the political sides have given themselves room for deniability. We didn't inform them. Okay, well, maybe, but I'm very surprised that they were able to carry out that operation for 38 minutes without attracting some type of military response, at least law enforcement response. I've heard of bad cop response times, but that would be really bad. On the other hand, deniability. It looks like they've factored that in for both sides.
Well, Jeff, let me ask this question for you, or ask this question for your thought on this, is we've heard some rumblings around the Beltway that now that we got the target, that the question now comes up, do we need a Department of Homeland Security? What are your thoughts on that?
I'm sorry, Justin, you've broken up a little bit. I didn't catch all that question about the Homeland, about the Director of Homeland Security.
Well, no, the question now comes up is there's rumblings around D.C. that now that we got the target, we don't need a Department of Homeland Security. What are your thoughts on that?
I think that's a very convenient argument, especially now that we're having some challenges with on the budget front. And I know you guys spent some time talking about that last week. And, you know, the budget's not going to get any easier, and that's a very easy easy conversation to make. But I think, you know, to the point the discussion we've already had, and that is, you know, because you've chopped off the head of the snake, the problem is it's not just the head of the snake. It's really a Medusa. You've got a lot of other snakes that are out there, and you can't, just because this one individual is gone, there's a large operational network. There are cells, there are plans that are already in place, and, you know, the very fact that he is gone, as Dr. Barron was talking about a bit earlier, you know, there may well be plans that are going to be executed here over the next few days that have been in place as a result of his death in the event that he were killed. So, you know, the Department of Homeland Security is not just in place to respond to Al-Qaeda or to respond to Osama bin Laden. There's a broad swath of responsibility that falls within the department. I think if you take a look at the Coast Guard, you know, they do have missions assigned to deal with keeping the port secure. But there's I think there was a very big oil spill in the Gulf about a year ago now that the Coast Guard spent a lot of time responding to. I think that you take a look at ICE and Immigration and Customs Enforcement, their mission is not just to be worried about Al-Qaeda who may be coming across the border. That's part of it. But it's also breaking up child pornography cells. It's also breaking up drug smuggling cells. Customs and Border Protection along the border have been there long before terrorist networks decided to come into this country. And you know, that's one of the many things that they're focused on. Customs and Border Protection spends a lot of time focused on trade regulation. I'm with you. I understand that. I think there may be some efficiencies that could be made, but I don't think just because we've had one big success, or let's say one significant success, that means you completely do away with a significant part of the federal government.
Al?
One of the things I've said twice on this program so far is that we should consider the death of Obama the beginning of the end, not the end. It also occurs to me that that could be a very optimistic view, that this isn't even the beginning of the end. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Dr. Banner?
Go ahead.
Dr. Banner, do you have any thoughts on that? That, in fact, this is not this is not the end game. This is actually the beginning of the end?
Yes. From my operational days, I'll say that first reports are always wrong. And when this thing went down, the first report I heard on CNN was that it was a predator strike, and then it turns out to not be. And these first ideas that we're having are good ideas, that this is the beginning of the end. But it's really early days. Something that relates back to what Jeff was saying about possibly reorganizing yet again the government in the midst of conflict, is that we actually have a tremendously resilient system if we will let it do its job. And it can't do it in the next hour. It can't do it in the next day. It takes time. And we should trust the structures that we've built to respond appropriately and adequately. We have on our southern border a serious criminal insurgency waging, and we seem to be appropriately postured to deal with that now. Why in the world would we destroy what we have worked for and take the good work that those men and women have done and rearrange the picture? That makes no sense to me.
Ralph.
Dr. Barron, I completely agree with you. I think, you know, the other side of the coin to your question, Al, is I think that if we narrow down the terrorism threat, the issue of radical Islam threat to the U.S., we like to narrow it down to a face or to a single organization, to the kind of classic Cold War mentality, and we can't do that. The issue that we're facing is an ideological threat. We still haven't, I don't think as a country, we haven't faced up to that. You know, our traditional powers, the military is really framed and shaped to deal with conventional threats. And so, you know, we've seen the face of the military change over the last 10 years to this, you know, as Dr. Nagel talks about in his book, is that, you know, we're really becoming much more of an unconventional warfare type of machine. I think the other side of the coin is we have to, as Dr. Barron says, we've got to take a better approach to how we're dealing with this. Right now, we look at this threat based on the 2-year election cycles or 6-year election cycles or the 4-year presidential election cycle. And that's not fair, because this threat, this ideological challenge, is going to continue. We've got to address it. And maybe some of that solution is, you know, supporting some of the democracy movements in the Middle East, which we've sort of started. We have verbally encouraged individuals to step forward and to embrace and push democracy, yet we've backed away from our true political will in supporting those individuals on the streets in the Middle East. I think if we really want to challenge the whole Islamic threat, let's encourage democracy in the Middle East. I think we kind of failed in challenging the communist state in Cuba. Maybe we can do a little better job in trying to deal with the issues we've got in the Middle East. Of the even though they're our friends by name, I think we are much more of a democratic society. I think that's what those gentlemen in the First Congress, is that what you call yourself, the First Congress Society, that spent time in Philadelphia drafting that Declaration of Independence, that's what they would do. Not necessarily supporting the dictators or the power families in the Middle East.
Right. Ralph, any thoughts on whether the Patriot Act should be extended? That's going to be an issue coming up in Congress in the next couple of weeks.
Jeff?
I feel pretty strongly about the Patriot Act. I think one of the things you need to do is how much the American people appreciate the success of taking out bin Laden over the weekend. And I think it's pretty clear from just a quick survey of the media that those successes were a result of the Patriot Act and activities, including enhanced interrogation that perhaps, you know, has been ill-defined as being torture. I don't think that's the case. We have to have some of those capabilities, wiretaps. But we have a court system that keeps the oversight and provides guidance to the system. Maybe there's some tweaks to the Patriot Act, but I think we need to strengthen it, anything else.
Dr. Bannon, your views on that?
Yeah, I would be very much in agreement. On the EITs, we may have a slight disagreement, but there's a little doubt, it would seem from this, that the interrogations worked. And certainly when it comes to getting information electronically following people rather than devices, which is a lot of what, you know, that had to do with, this is a modern age. People may have, I would bet that you guys sitting there, two or three of you probably have four or five electronic devices of different types. So it's important to be able to follow the suspect, not particular devices. They're not hooked on our wall anymore. I would certainly support the continuation of the Patriot Act.
Well, we're at the bottom of the hour right now, gentlemen. We're going to take a quick break. Can you stay with us for one more segment?
Yes, sir.
Sure.
All right, stay with us. This is Backroom Politics, live from Shelley's Back Room in the heart of our nation's capital, Washington, D.C., 1331 F Street, America's premier cigar tavern. I'm here with Congressman Al Swift, Dr. Ralph Winnie, and on the line with us is Dr. Dave Bannon from the Naval Postgraduate School out in Monterey, California, and former Assistant Commissioner for Customs Border Protection, Jeff Robertson. Stay with us. We'll be back in 2 minutes. And we're back live from Shelley's Back Room, 1331 F Street in Washington, D.C. This is Backroom Politics live from Shelley's Back Room. And joining us for our final segment is one of the professors from the Naval Postgraduate School Center for Homeland Defense and Security out in Monterey, California, Dr. Dave Vann. Doctor, appreciate you joining us for the second segment.
Yes, sir.
And also joining us is the former Assistant Commissioner for Customs and Border Protection, retired Coast Guard officer, Jeff Robertson. Jeff, thanks for staying with us.
Sure. Thank you.
When we go back, we want to focus now on some of the questions that have to be answered here in the days to come after the newness of bin Laden being gone. There's a lot of questions. We talked about the Pakistani issue. We talked about the what's next issue. But one of the questions we have in your studies and your understanding of how this has all come about, what kind of credibility does this establish with our own internal intelligence community? How much of this is a feather in their cap, and does this bring the intelligence community back to its strongest form from even back in the Cold War? I ask that Dr. Bannon.
I would say absolutely. It is a demonstration of their capabilities, which I would say are considerable. It was fun to beat up on the intelligence community, it would seem, for many in D.C. and actually across the country. It seemed after 9/11 it was fun, you know, it was like sport. But the men and women in the intelligence community are pretty amazing, if from my estimation, and this is an excellent demonstration of that. We have seen over the last 9.5 years a number of times where the intelligence community's information has led to the early disruption and stuffing of potential terrorists, and we've seemed to have a lot of disrespect for that excellent job they have done, and they in this act. Their detractors are not able to get away from that. And can I go on just a little further and say, I find it really heartening the way in which the military and the intelligence community worked jointly in this. The Joint Special Operations Command, I mean, what a resounding feather in its cap this should be. It's quite a success.
Al, you have a question.
The Post today did a long article that basically said that the days when the various intelligence agencies were all competing for everything were over, and that in fact this operation demonstrated that they were working together. Do you see it that way?
Wouldn't I like to be a fly on the wall in some of those meetings? But certainly the outcome would suggest that there was extreme cooperation by the various entities that were involved in this operation. There's no doubt that there are going to be systemic and personality-driven conflicts in government. I can't imagine that not being the case. But you know, we have this phrase that refers to jointness in the military as being purple. You know, you have to do your joint time, and they seem to really achieve that jointness. Intelligence operators, military intelligence, and military operators. So I'm blown away with
this. Well, the success of it, one would think, would encourage the agencies to join more and get a joint success rather than go immediately, at least, fall back into the old territorial kind of attitude.
I would agree with you. This is the time to build on that success, and the way to do that is to make the right thing easy and the wrong thing hard. Make it hard on people to go back to the old ways. Make it easy on them to do the right thing.
Jeff,
Al, just a quick just get one quick point on that, and I totally agree with what the doctor was saying. But I think there's also another couple unique things here. One is, while I completely agree that the agencies, intelligence agencies, since 9/11 are playing much better together. I spent some time when I was in the Coast Guard working with the FBI after 9/11, and things have completely changed. You were talking about some significant patriots that are in that intelligence communities and the law enforcement community. But I think there's a characteristic that we can't forget, and that is there is actually an intentional competition that is in place. It's an analytical competition, and it's to have competitive analytical perspectives on different pieces of information. And so what we want, we do not want groupthink in the intelligence community. What we want is we want individuals that have the ability to make decisions based on competing analysis. But one of the things that plagued us before 9/11 was that there was, even though there was competition, there was a lot of group hugging going on, and people agreed on certain analysis. There's more of an encouragement within the community now to have competing analysis of similar information so that we can look at different perspectives. So there were things that were missed before 9/11 that were fairly obvious, as we've all read in the 9/11 report. But I think you're exactly right. The communities are doing a much better job of sharing, but there needs to be some intentional competition. There's also possibly opportunities for some savings for some of the duplication that takes place in the intelligence community, which is kind of a topic for a different day.
Well, when we look at the possibility of retaliation for the Bin Laden operation, is Al-Qaeda capable of taking the attack back to the United States, Dr. Branham?
It's my opinion that they're not capable right at this moment at the level of a 9/11 attack. That they are capable of taking the fight back to the U.S., I would say absolutely. There are those who are willing to act on that ideology in some regional capacity. And as we've seen from a number of lower-level attacks, the tens and hundreds can be killed with a much less spectacular attack than a 9/11 style. And if the Christmas Day bomber had been successful, we would be having a slightly different discussion at this time. If that device had exploded as opposed to, the passengers subduing him. So, yes, I say they absolutely have the ability to attack. I think also we need to bring in a willingness to educate the American public about what terrorism is. We cannot hermetically seal the borders of the United States. There will be successful terrorist attacks in this country. That's a reality. The level to which they will be effective is not determined. But there will be attacks.
Jeff, you have a comment on that?
Yeah, I think there's another piece of that. And you're exactly right. Unfortunately, there's this. We've done a very poor job of manning the public's expectations. And I like the way you said we can never hermetically seal our borders. The other piece of this is there are both individuals in place here in the U.S. as well as some homegrown individuals who may take on their own ideological campaign against the U.S. based on Bin Laden. To your question, Justin, but I think we have to be very aware of that, whether it was the Times Square bomber or several other organizations, the bombers in New Jersey, the Air Force Base, and different parts of the country. There are individuals who, whether prompted by overseas activity, whether by pressure from the Al-Qaeda in the Maghreb, Somali activity, there's individuals that here within our own country may not need overseas prompting for activity and to launch attacks. So I think that's another piece that the American public needs to be well aware of and needs to be, I will put a plug for the, See Something, Say Something campaign that the Secretary has. We need to be aware. That's not a time to be, blowing the whistle on your neighbor that stays up late having a party. It's just, that there are opportunities that we can affect here in this country, but we've become very complacent. And that's my concern. after the death of Bin Laden is that we're going to become a little more complacent.
Ralph, do you worry that we won't, in this country, we're not going to be able to break up the terrorist cell networks with budget cuts and issues affecting how our military is going to be funded going forward with the new budget that's going to come out?
Jeff?
Yeah, I think that's definitely a concern. I think you're going to see at the local law enforcement level, as the budgets start tightening up at the high, you know, here within the Beltway, that trickle down to money making its way down to state and locals. And if you don't have the boots on the street, if you don't have at a federal level, if you don't have the Coast Guard cutters underway, if you don't have Border Patrol, you know, walking the line, you're going to have opportunities. So, yeah, I am concerned about where the budget debates go here over the next few months.
Well, can I dovetail onto that?
Absolutely, Dr. Bannum.
There are more than 750,000 police in the United States. When we were talking about how Pakistan could possibly not know that Bin Laden was in this compound, which was kind of strange for the area, it was the local cop that would be at first suspicious. It is incredible to me that we are cutting budgets of police agencies across this country up to 30% in many cases, when these are exactly the intelligence collectors we need to make our country strong and safe. Local law enforcement, it's not just military and intelligence. Local law enforcement has become very much a real player in making the homeland safe. And to cut the budgets of these departments at this point is a danger to the American way of life.
That's a great point. That's a great point. In the last couple of minutes we have in this segment, gentlemen, I want to pose to you more of a theoretical question, and Dr. Van, we'll start with you. Is the question of, from this being T-minus zero, where do you see the fight going or our American efforts going in the next 30 days, the next 90 days, and let's say a year from now?
I would say that if, and that's a real if, there is, as they've suggested, a treasure trove of intelligence that's been uncovered in this, then they will be working towards other high-value targets that have been identified in that treasure trove. Now, I say if because, you know, who knows if there really was a treasure trove of information there. It's just hard to say because I would certainly want to be putting that out anyway. So I would say, first of all, I'd be continue to go after high-value targets. Zawahiri, Anwar al-Awlaki, you know, these kinds of names, the American who's been running their media, name escapes me for some reason. These people need to be rounded up. As you look down the road a year, that would be a great time to get back together and say, these early reports, were they accurate or were they not? When we reevaluate our effectiveness, has there been a reduction in the number or intensity of attacks? That would be a good metric for evaluating our success, I would say.
Jeff, I pose the question to you. Where do you see us going in the next 30, next 90, or a year from now?
I think the doctor's right on the money. Then, you know, near term, I would look for some specific special operations activities that maybe is based on good information that's drawn from that treasure trove. And as the doctor says, hopefully it wasn't just home movies that were picked up. Hopefully there was some really good information there, or just some, you know, some computer disks. But I feel sure that there will probably be some near-term activities. I would also start looking to how does this turn into activity in opposition in Afghanistan? You know, what happens over the next 60 to 90 days with Taliban? Is there an increased opposition to our troops in Afghanistan?
is there no sustained? And I think the metrics that he was talking about are very good ones. Do we have sustained operations? Is there increase or decrease? Are we able to take out some networks, whether communication or logistics, those type of things? The other thing is I would look for probably longer term is potential attacks on U.S. interests in other locations other than just the Middle East. I'm talking in Europe, as well as European and any, you know, Western type of interest in Europe and even in Africa. Because I think you may well see some of these cells starting to operate on their own. Not calling it necessarily rogue operators, but individuals making their own decisions because they, you know, may not be receiving the kind of direct connection or direct direction that they're used to. So I think that's more of a longer-term concern for me is the rogue operators are out there doing their own thing, although they may start getting a little sloppy. That would be in our favor. My concern is that increased activity could definitely put a strain on our resources.
Right. Well, Dr. Dave Banner, Jeff Robertson, we appreciate you guys joining us here on Backroom Politics. This has been fantastic segments for us both.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, everybody here is in agreement. We'd love to have you guys back and talk about some of the aftermath here in the next couple of months if you guys would be willing to join us. But again, thank you for your time. Thanks for joining us on Backroom Politics. This is Backroom Politics Live from Shelley's Back Room. We're going to take a 2-minute break. When we come back, we're going to still do Tell Me a Story. Stay tuned. Backroom Politics here in Shelley's Back Room in the heart of our nation's capital. We've got the last segment coming up, and it's going to be Tell Me a Story, although I don't know what story we could possibly tell short of you knowing where Al-Zaghari is that could possibly trump the story we've seen over the past 48 hours. But we're going to do this anyways. Al, do you even have a story?
I have a story.
What's that?
But I'm thinking that if Ralph doesn't have a story, because he can talk in Chinese and we'll never know.
No, I have a story.
All right, well, Ralph, okay. Tell me a story.
We just have come off a royal wedding of epic proportions.
We didn't even get a chance to talk about that.
Well, there's going to be another wedding coming up very soon. Prince Albert of Monaco. It's going to be his very first wedding.
Really?
He's marrying a woman named Charlene Whitstock, who was former Olympic swimmer from South Africa.
Right.
And look for extensive media coverage of that. She's a very beautiful woman.
Did you get your invitation yet?
No, I didn't, but I'm going to the G8, folks, so maybe I'll see him there and can ask.
There you go. There you go. Al, do you have a story?
Give him our personal best. Yes, my story is this, that Prince Charles will never be the King of England.
Really? You're certain of this? You have it on good authority that he will abdicate for Prince William?
I have it on no authority whatsoever.
That's great.
The feelings in the back of my neck suggest
to save
the monarchy in England, they're going to have to make a jump.
So you're announcing today, probably years from now, where we will promote this as a scoop, you are suggesting that Prince Charles will abdicate the throne in lieu of Prince William, the Duke of Cambridge.
I always believe you should predict things that are way in the future, where everybody forgets what you said.
Well, I will tell you, this has been a fantastic show, even with some of the audio problems. I will tell you right now that everybody's attention is going to be on the TV, at least for the foreseeable future. We're still getting information in about the rocket attacks in Kabul, Afghanistan. I think we're still going to see some more media coverage on the operation around the capture and death of bin Laden.
Well, I have another prediction.
What's that?
It's going to be a bumpy ride, to quote Betty Davis from
Well, we live in interesting times.
We live in interesting times, and Al-Qaeda will respond. We will respond. We will find a lot of our allies in support. We will find things grumbling around the edges.
Right. And it's important to be vigilant and to recognize that the terror threat still does exist.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, again, we want to thank our guests, Jeff Robertson, Dave Bannon. We really appreciate them taking time out of their busy schedules to give us their thoughts on the bin Laden situation. We will continue to monitor it here in Washington, D.C. Next Tuesday, we will be back. At least Ralph and Al and I will be back. Bob Hines has said he will not be here next week. So for you Bob Hines groupies, you're going to have to take another week off and without him. But on behalf of Dr. Ralph Winnie, Congressman Al...
Where did you get the idea Bob has any groupies?
Come on. They line up along the window here.
Oh. It's that cane.
It's the shillelagh.
I thought they were for me.
No, they aren't for you. No, you have your own set of groupies that text you. On behalf of Dr. Ralph Winnie, Congressman Al Swift, I'm your moderator, Justin Russell. We'll be back next Tuesday, 4 o'clock. All audio connections will be intact when we show up next week. But this has been Blog Talk Radio's Backroom Politics, live from Shelley's Back Room. We'll see you next week, 4 o'clock. Thanks for being with us. Have a great, great week.
Oh, Indiana.
Woo!